in my opinion, great training and great rehab don't look very different.
Let's talk about BFR.
The higher NME person is able to dig a little deeper into their nervous system and recruit those higher threshold motor units, and their maximal efforts are actually closer to their physical potential. By tempering, you know, just like anything else, we're giving input into the nervous system, hopefully to change some output. Is finding people that you really respect, that you feel like have something that you can really learn from, and then be willing to make sacrifices to work with that person.
This is Maestro on the Mic,
a podcast designed to help you change your mindset and your life.
It is time for something new.
Join host Dr. Shante Cofield, also known as the Movement Maestro, on a journey to see the bigger picture.
Open your eyes.
Find your passion.
And discover how movement unites us all.
Let's get it popping.
This is Maestro on the Mic. I'm the Maestro, and you're about to get maestrified.
3, 2, 1.
Hey guys, Maestro here. Welcome to the new year and another episode of Maestro on the Mic. Today I have with me a super special guest. His name is Josh Jeffrey, soon to be Dr. Josh Jeffrey. He is the owner and head coach at Carolina Performance Training. He is actually currently, when this drops, he's still a PT student, which is like blows my mind. He's doing all this stuff. PT student at what he calls the real USC. I'll let you guys get into that. And he's doing so many incredible things. I just had some, we were talking beforehand. He's one of the most knowledgeable humans, I even want to say, that I've had the opportunity to meet. And I knew I had to bring him on because I want to kind of take a new direction or open up to many directions with this podcast and maybe make this one a little bit more sciencey than my past ones have been. So without further ado, welcome to the show, my dude, soon to be Dr. Josh Jeffries. How you doing, my man?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm honored and humbled to be here with you. I appreciate it.
This is honestly my pleasure, and soon to be the audience's pleasure. You guys, I'm going to tell you right now, get a pen and paper, or I don't write anything down, my handwriting's terrible, but get something so you can take notes because there's a lot of information coming your way. But before we jump into all that, why don't you paint the people a bit of a picture? Who are you?
Yeah, so I, like you mentioned, I'm in physical therapy school and in halfway through my third year. I will graduate about a year from now, next December, from our recording time. Yeah, it's crazy. You can start to see the light at the end of the tunnel a little bit, getting close. Most of the didactic work is done. Just have a couple of rotations left. I'm really excited to you know, hopefully finish that up and get to practicing here soon. But I also am the owner, as you mentioned, of Carolina Performance Training. We have a facility here in South Carolina in Columbia, the greater Columbia area. We actually have a facility we partnered up with Vertex Physical Therapy Specialists. So some of my mentors and location where we were lucky enough to host one of your courses. So we are under that building providing what we think is, you know, the best in PT and strength conditioning to the Columbia area. And we also have an arm of our performance training company that is all remote coaching. So we have some athletes really all over the country and in other countries as well, focusing primarily on CrossFitters. That seems to be the market that we've really immersed ourselves in. We were lucky enough to find, you know, have our first CrossFit Games individual qualifier, and we've had a bunch of regional athletes. Cool. We're kind of, you know, was our niche. And then with this new facility, we're looking to really provide more for the Columbia area and kind of your general population. So we're doing a lot of things, and it's so much fun getting to, you know, work with patients and athletes at the same time. You know, I wouldn't change it.
This, you are living the dream. I know I brought him on, guys, because he is doing all the things that I talk about, but he's going to be able to put a nice science spin on things. And that kind of, when I first reached out to him, I was like, oh, Josh, I would love it if you came on and you talked about you know, all the science. And then we got to talking about his background, and I was like, dude, you are embodying what I try to preach and promote with this podcast. So amazing. Let me actually plug that for you. He's also the co-host of the Better Faster podcast with Brandon Vaughn. I was had the good fortune of being on that podcast, and I went, like you said, and I taught a rock tape course down at Vertex. But I'm going to link that in the show notes, because a lot of the stuff that we're going to talk about, they have done full episodes on, and it's an absolutely invaluable resource. So definitely, when this is done, check that out. I want to tease out a little bit more here, mm-hmm. because you've done a ton. Like, it sounds like you've lived a million lives. So can you just take us through from undergrad, what you studied, then coaching, then deciding to go back to PT school? Like, what did that look like?
Yeah, so my undergrad actually is in business. But I actually, to tell you the truth, I really majored in baseball. I was lucky enough to play baseball in college, and that was priority number one. And so it was business administration, a double major in finance and economics, and worked in a cube actually for a little over a year, 13 months, and very quickly realized that the cube life was not for me. So I decided, you know, I got to do something else. I got to do something where I can interact with more people, where I can really feel like I'm making a difference. And for me, even while I was playing, to tell you the truth, I loved the strength conditioning aspect of it as much as I loved playing the sport as well. So I thought to myself, you know, I might love being a strength conditioning coach, specifically maybe in college. So that's when I moved from Ohio to Carolina to go to USC for my master's in exercise science. And it was an awesome experience. I got to, you know, work in the strength conditioning department on the Olympic side, mainly with baseball, softball, women's soccer, indoor and sand volleyball, and then a little on the football side too, and getting to work with these SEC athletes. I'm working with the best of the best. So it was an incredible experience. And all the while, this thing called CrossFit started to become a big part of my life. You know, first as an athlete, I found it, you know, just like a lot of people, you know, finish competing and then you need, you know, what am I training for? I needed something to keep working. So, I started training primarily as my own sport, and was lucky enough to go to regionals a couple of times when there were regionals on teams. And that led into coaching CrossFit as well. So, following, the completion of my master's program, I'm coaching full time at CCF, at Carolina CrossFit here in Columbia, started Carolina Performance Training. And to tell you the truth, man, my co-host, as you mentioned, Brandon, getting to watch him, him work, I realized there was so much more I wanted to learn. And it was just incredible to see the difference in, the lives of his patients, the difference he was able to make in everyone at Vertex. And so I'm sitting there, I'm like, man, this PT thing, I want to do this too. And I want to find a way to blend it all together, because in my opinion, great training and great rehab don't look very different, I think that there's, the best strength coaches and the best PTs at the end of the day, they're practicing very similarly in a lot of ways. So for me, it was a kind of a natural course to stay at USC and go into, and when I say USC, I know you mentioned I'm at the University of South Carolina. So stay there and start my DPT. So looking forward to finishing that up and getting to work with, the great minds at Vertex as well, and blend this thing together and really see if we can provide the Columbia community with something great.
This is, I'm sitting here just chomping at the bit and just so excited. Just, I want to, because I'm, maybe I missed it. How did Brandon/Vertex and you guys, how did you meet? How did that happen?
Yeah, so Brandon actually, he was the very first person I'd ever seen start a cash clinic. He was running a cash-based PT clinic out of Carolina CrossFit, just himself in 2013, 2014, like really early on, just him. And that was prior to him and partnering up with Dr. Jim Floyd and starting Vertex PT specialists here in Columbia. So he had, which is, and that's a hybrid clinic, which you could get into that if we wanted to. So they do take some insurances, but not all insurances. So, I got to see Brandon practicing in the gym, which was so awesome. If I had a question, that was the guy I went to, And then, so when rotation time came around in PT school, I knew where I was going to go. I did all my observation hours with Brandon and the people at their clinic. And then I did my first outpatient orthopedic rotation there. It was just kind of a logical fit. And then also, Brandon's also been a client of mine from a strength conditioning perspective for a very long time. We've kind of been intertwined in our businesses a lot, really for a few years now.
Oh, it's all falling into place now. I understand. In terms of your kind of training philosophy, I have a million questions I want to ask you, but in terms of, because I think maybe go in order to give the folks listening some more context. Mm-hmm. In terms of your training philosophy, do you draw a lot from OPEX? I see you have that as part of your background. Mm-hmm. I mean, I haven't studied OPEC stuff formally, but is that something that you're really drawing a lot on? And if so, if you could just explain to the people kind of what that is.
Yes, for sure. I have to give them a lot of credit. The all the people at OPEC, James Fitzgerald, his entire coaching staff, you know, they are out of Arizona, but they have a great coaching certification program. It's really extensive. I started it back when it was, five different modules, all individual. There was assessment, program design, nutrition, life coaching, and business systems. And they're all individual. So I had started them like one by one back, maybe 5 years ago. And now they've grouped everything together into a cohort where it's kind of all integrated. And I've gone through that as well with them, and I have to give them a lot of credit for helping shape a lot of the way that I approach a lot of things. I've also had my own coach in the from a training perspective who comes from that same mold and has really helped me develop as well. So blending their coaching certification program with a lot of other continuing ed or mm-hmm. various resources developed our own little style at CPT.
Dude, all the things. Mm-hmm. I'm going to just keep on rolling.
Yeah.
You said that you're utilizing other things. You're taking other courses. Let's dive into that. Mm-hmm. I really want to talk about NME, but before that, let's talk about a different acronym. Let's talk about BFR.
Yeah.
For those of you out there who don't know what it is, we're talking about blood flow restriction. It is huge, hot topic item. Just you're seeing it everywhere. At least we're starting to see it everywhere. It's starting to see a lot more places. And if you're on social media, you are seeing it everywhere. Mm-hmm. Teach us, learn us.
Yeah.
Go.
BFR is wonderful. I was fortunate enough that we proposed a research project, as part of our curriculum for our DPT program. We're required to do a pretty extensive research project. It's actually why our program is actually 10 semesters versus more of the standard 9 semesters. So it's a big part of our curriculum. And we proposed a BFR project. And so our program actually helped us go and take the Owens Recovery Science course. So big shout out to them for being so supportive of what we were trying to do. And so we were, able to go and take that course. It was actually held at Vertex as well. It seems we get some pretty good people to come through. So, we're very lucky for that. And so we had the course. It was awesome. Vertex purchased a couple of Delphi units, and they're in regular rotation. I know they are getting used all the time in the clinic. And of course, we're using them for our project. And essentially, for those who may not know what blood flow restriction training really is, you're trying to essentially create an environment that allows for adaptation using a lot less load and intensity than would otherwise be needed. So if we're talking about creating hypertrophy, it's commonly seen that you're going to need loading of 65, 70% of 1 RM for a significant time under tension to really stimulate hypertrophy. That's not always possible, especially if you're in the rehab world and you're working with somebody post-op or whatever it might be. They're not able to load sufficiently for that. So by using these specialized cuffs with Dopplers in there trying to measure, they're measuring flow, we can significantly occlude arterial flow, not completely, and completely occlude venous return, the blood flowing back up towards the heart. And now you are creating a different environment. So you're still performing similar movements, but the loading needed to create adaptation is now only 20-30%. So that is much more manageable and tolerable for someone that may not be able to load as heavy. So it does that by, there's a lot of theories on how that works, but obviously an environment that has less oxygen, it's changing, the metabolism, kind of how that's working. You're creating these byproducts, so you're getting increases in lactate. This is leading to a ton, crazy hormone cascade there, and you're getting a big secretion of growth hormone. And there's so many different things going on there, but essentially we're able to get a lot out of something where we're not having to put as much in terms of a loading perspective. So that's all awesome. But what we wanted to focus on for our project was more on the endurance side of things. And that's an area where the research really is not as extensive. More and more keeps coming out. But there have been some crazy, crazy studies showing some really significant increases in VO2 max, is the common metric by which you're measuring cardiorespiratory endurance or fitness. And so you're seeing some studies that show double digit 10% increases in VO2 max in trained populations, which is so hard to get.
Yeah.
So that's what our project is. We're doing a biking protocol using the cuff, something that's manageable. We're actually using CrossFitters as our population because, you know, that's mm-hmm. what I have access to, which is always great. We're really trying to see, you know, can this be a nice little supplement or adjunct to training to really help kind of get that last little extra percent of performance in this trained population.
I have so many questions.
Yeah.
Oh my God. So as it relates to endurance, mm-hmm. what's the proposed mechanism then? And you're saying you're using it for cycling. So they're wearing it on like the upper thigh mm-hmm. and cycling. And what's the proposed mechanism for how this is changing or going to change VO2?
That's a great question. VO2 max. There are a couple of different ways you could probably go with it. I think a lot of the mechanisms are still, not necessarily understood. And that's what we're trying to dive in a little bit more. But it potentially could be hypertrophy of type 1 fibers. It could be better utilization of oxygen, because we know that is part of the entire equation, is that utilization of oxygen when we're talking about output. So it could be a better utilization there. To tell you the truth, I can't say I'm 100% sure. And that's kind
awesome.
Of what we're hoping to kind of determine a little bit more. And I think as more and more studies come out in this area, we might be able to better nail down some different ideas.
This is fascinating. And I love that you've kind of really harped on the fact that this is a modality that trains adaptation with less stress, mm-hmm. if you will, on the body, because that's huge in the recovery world and in the rehab world. I saw some stuff the other day, and there were some clinicians, because everyone likes to poo-poo on everything, because mm-hmm. that's just how social media is. And they were just like, not saying the best things about BFR. And then I go to the gym right after with like my busted knee. And I was just like, I physically can't put enough load through my body to make this thing grow. Mm-hmm. So something like BFR becomes hugely beneficial when it's like, hey, I could potentially hypertrophy these tissues without having to try and, you know, squat 65-75% of my measly one rep max, which I actually can't do, because as soon as I start loading more, this hurts my knee.
Yep.
And we know everything's going to shut down from there. So, you know, there's so much clinical utility in something like this, and through all the mechanisms that he just said. And now to think of this kind of going the other side of the spectrum of endurance, like, mind blown.
Yeah, we're excited to see how that ends up coming out. Hopefully, you know, well, to be done, we got to be done by the end of April, you know, to stay on timeline. So that's the goal. We're going to be rushing to get that in. So hopefully we'll have some cool results to share.
Dude, amazing. You guys, I'm going to move on to the next question, because I could stay with this forever, but I have like so many science topics I want to ask him. Again, check out the podcast. I will link it in the show notes, and I'll link the specific episode, so you guys want to kind of go down the rabbit hole more, there you go. And you're still recommending Owens as the go-to for continuing ed on that?
Yeah, well, that's the one I've taken. Again, I can't speak to any of the ones that I have not taken. I know there are others out there now. I really enjoyed the course that I took. I thought it was great. Thought the instructor was great. Thought the information was great. The manual that came with it and was very thorough. So I have nothing but great things to say about Owens. But there are other options out there, I know.
Awesome. And so I'm taking it, you're using those units for the testing, because you have them at Vertex.
Yep, that's where we're doing that's where we're doing the intervention. So we'll have access to the Delphi units, and you know, that's great. I love the built-in safety metrics with it, is what mm-hmm. my favorite part of it, having the Doppler built in, I think is an incredible addition. And it's, again, I think it's, you know, those cuffs are great. They're expensive. I understand that. Yes. We're fortunate enough to have some of them, but I'd say they are probably the cream of the crop.
Yes, absolutely. And you guys, if you haven't, I always try to value or emphasize the value of an N of one, where mm-hmm. you are that N, you are that person. And when I taught there, these lovely gentlemen were so nice, and they're like, how about if you go on and use this? And it was actually horrendous. And I was on the ground dead. Go and try this stuff. Feel this firsthand. It's very easy to shit on something and be like, oh, no utility. If you haven't felt it, and also, if you don't need it, if you're like have no issues loading and you're everything's great, okay, fine. But for someone like me, or and plenty of people out there, where you're like, I actually can't move more weight or spend more time under tension because it hurts me. this thing, I was just like, holy smokes, this is unreal. So definitely look more into that. Mm-hmm. On to the next one. I have to, because this is like, I have so many things. I'm so excited to have you on here. Let's stay with the continuing ed kind of theme, body tempering.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
This, I'll let you free reign. You want to say what it is, how you're teaching, everything, all the things.
Yeah, you know, again, body tempering was the innovation of Donnie Thompson. I have to definitely give Donnie credit where credit's due. He was the very first power lifter to ever total 3,000 pounds. So that is, you know, your squat, your bench, and your deadlift in a meet, you know, your best lift of the three added together. And that is, you know, he added 3,000 pounds, which is absolutely incredible. And yeah, it's insane. A feat only been matched, I believe, by one other person who also is a huge proponent of body tempering. So there might be something to this stuff. But essentially, the best way to describe it to people is imagine a foam roller on steroids kind of thing. It is a implement that has a lot of weight to it. So imagine a steel cylinder, roughly the shape and size of a foam roller, but in varying weights, anywhere from, you know, 30 to 50 pounds up to some of the biggest ones that Donnie has that we use with some NFL players that are 175 pounds. So very, very heavy implements. And, you know, there's not a ton of actual research on BFR itself, but a lot of what we, you know, teach in this course that we go through is we try to extrapolate some of the research from foam rolling, from instrument assisted mm-hmm. soft tissue mobilization, from even spinal manipulation, even though that's not what we're, you know, trying to. It's not intentional. You're going to have cavitations. You will get some of that too. So we talk about, you know, what's really happening there. So there's a lot of, you know, research that we can kind of, you know, pull from other areas. But, you know, just like anything else, we're giving input into the nervous system, hopefully to change some output. And that's kind of the goal. We use this primarily as a, you know, maybe a pre-lifting situation. So we'll talk about different techniques or different areas that we would use an implement like this, basically to give, you know, a little bit input in the nervous system to better prepare it to be able to perform the task needed. But also, you know, based on some of the foam rolling literature and some other things, you know, it might be able to prevent, or at least mitigate some of the delayed onset muscle soreness post training mm-hmm. as well. So there are a few different instances where you could use it. It's really taken off more in the football community than anything else. You look at, I could run through a list of universities and they're all the major ones that, but last year alone, Clemson football, North Carolina basketball, to give you, best teams in each sport this is something that happens every game before the game. So it's something that the athletes are really, really enjoying and really getting a lot out of. And, you know, a lot of our individuals that come take this course, we get some PTs, actually some OTs, but really it's a lot of strength conditioning coaches. So it's been a fun ride. We're, you know, myself and a couple of PTs, and then Donnie, of course, we get to travel the country doing these.
That's so good. Females mm-hmm. using this. I mean, I feel like I just see it, you know, in terms of a lot of stuff on social media, things like that. And it's like a lot of big people and bigger people. Can you speak to that of like smaller people and them, you know, undergoing or experience their experience with body tempering and females in general?
Yeah, like, definitely. I think it is definitely not just for the big male gentleman that you may see in a lot of those videos. That happens to be a lot of Donnie's close friends, being that he is, you know, at the top of the super heavyweight powerlifting world, and we get a lot of high level football players. So you see a lot of videos of those. But tempering devices range in a ton of different weights, as I mentioned before, and actually a couple of companies now are coming out with ones that are loadable. They start at like 30 pounds, and you can add plates to them and change the weights, which is great, because just like anything else, there is kind of a introductory period, or kind of where you're just getting somebody used to this, where you're not using a ton of loading prior to, you know, increasing loading over time. So those devices that can be loaded to different weights are great for that. So we have some really light ones, maybe 20 pounds and lighter, for the bigger individuals. We'll use those on, say, extremities, but that could be what we use on hamstrings for somebody that's, you know, maybe a smaller female that's never had this done before. Mm-hmm. And the really only big difference with a lot of our female athletes is when we talk about the back, you know, it depending on their muscle mass and how palpable their spinous processes are, that could be a little bit of an issue if you don't have a roller that has a bevel in it, if you have one that's just straight across. And so when we talk about in the course, that's the number one thing with the course is safety. Even more than anything else is making sure that we know what we're doing here, because these things, you know, are quite heavy. That's one area where we might have to take some consideration, is either use a beveled roller that has a little cutout in the middle, or even putting, you know, things like a yoga mat, over top of that person's, you know, back before rolling it or something. But yeah, there are, you know, a ton of female athletes that utilize these techniques, and our courses have a fair number of them attending as well. But you're right. A lot of Donnie's videos are a lot of the big guys. So
huge people, you're right. I'm not very big. I don't know about this.
When his training team, when everybody's all squat, you know, his, you know, lifting partners, when they're all putting up, you know, squats near 1,000 pounds, you know, sometimes that skews a little things in terms of the public perception, but it definitely is something that everybody can use. And we have a lot of our PTs that are using it in clinic as well. So it's been pretty cool.
Look at that. And so is there stuff being taught about mechanical disruption of tissue, or is this really, we're leaning on the science of, you know, inputs to the nervous system in terms of how it's working?
Yeah, we're going much more the latter there.
Awesome.
I think just as honestly, that was my favorite part about the course that you came to teach when you came and taught the Rock Blade course. That was one of those things that, depending on who you talk to, you could get a very different explanation on what's going on. And we try to stick to what is currently known about manual therapy and what we think is actually happening. So we know we're not really creating any, really any tissue changes in that instance, right? Deforming fascia or anything like that. We're really giving input in the nervous system. We know that, you know, fascia, you know, has, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of mechanoreceptors. So we're giving input into the system, which is hopefully going to change that output. So we stick pretty much from a more of a nervous system perspective.
For sure.
We try to stick with as current what literature nowadays is, you know, leaning us towards.
And I love that. I love that that's the approach, and been looking more into it. In terms of trying to take a course, it's very difficult to take a course when you teach as much as I do. It's just like, there's no weekends. I love that that's the approach that's being taken, because it's very easy to, you know, when I teach the blades course, when someone gets an implement in their hand, they're like, I'm going to fix you. And then we just see this, like, I'm going to have to go so hard on you and, you know, ignore your nervous system. I'm having this mechanical effect. So if you give them an even bigger tool, you know, the fear is that people are going to go crazy. But I love that you have these people, these instructors, yourself included, that are saying like, no, hey, this is what's happening. You change the input to change the output. And this is, it makes sense when you phrase it that way and we think about it that way, that also if we give a bigger input, you know, a gradated or graduated, gradually bigger input, we can have changes in our output. So there's, you know, we can't say that there's no use to that and it's so aggressive. Like, they're taking the same implement, we're just looking at it at a different scale. And we tend to see, you know, the non-clinical world leading the charge in terms of advances, because perhaps they're not worried about getting sued or whatever. I don't know. But BFR came from that same world. And we're seeing, you know, tempering come from that same world. And floss came from that same world. And so there's definitely validity to it. And we should be giving it a chance. So if people wanted to kind of look into that more and take a course with you. You're teaching that, so, right? Mm-hmm. How can they do that, my dude? What's the contact info?
Yep, if they want to see it in action, the number one person to follow on Instagram is Thompson Bowtie, and the Bowtie is another one of Donnie's products. That is the home for a lot of the videos and techniques, because Donnie loves to post and put up new things that he's working on. But you can also go to bodytempering.com. That is where you're going to find all the information about upcoming courses, a ton of videos, things like that on there. I work on a directory for the people who have taken the course as well. To try to, you know, be able to attach, you know, or connect people with individuals that might be able to help them. So bodytempering.com would be the website to go.
Awesome. I will link all that in the show notes, my friends. On to the next topic. I'm loving this. NME. This is actually kind of the reason I had contacted you in the first place. Josh did an episode 42, I believe, of Better, Faster. And it was all about NME. And this was a concept that I was first introduced to a few years ago, because my coach had taken, my the head coach at my old CrossFit box had gone through and was going through the OPEX cert and stuff. And so it was a concept that I was made aware of and kind of did some research into because it was a confusing topic to me because it was kind of like inverse relationships and what I thought. Just from like kind of the verbiage. And then Josh came out with this episode in August I listened to, and I was just like, dude, this guy knows his shit and can present it in a very digestible fashion. And I think it's something that's very important for everyone to understand, especially like you were saying, where we're seeing the bridging of the gap between rehab, performance, strength and conditioning, physical therapy. So, you know, the more you know, the better. Mm-hmm. So can you talk to us about NME?
Yeah. So NME, neuromuscular efficiency. So when I think about NME, I'm basically thinking about as how well can this person recruit musculature for a maximal effort. So when you're going for a maximal effort lift or whatever it might be, kind of what percentage of muscle fibers can that person recruit? How easily can they tap into their higher threshold motor units? And that's very different for each person, and it's going to impact how I program for them. It's going to impact how they respond to the training program in terms of how they respond to different volumes or loading or intensity. So it's something that as someone gets more into that intermediate or advanced level, depending on how you want to categorize them, it's something I want to look into so that way I can, program more effectively. Because, if I give everybody 5x5 back squat 80%, mm-hmm. we know that everybody's going to respond differently. And this is something that can give you a little insight into how that person's going to respond.
And is this something that is inherent? It's genetic. Can you change it?
Yeah, there is definitely a genetic component to it. It's also kind of specific male-female. Oftentimes, females end up being a little lower NME than males do, which is, can be beneficial in some instances. This is something where, higher and lower is not necessarily better and worse. Mm-hmm. I don't want people to look at it that way. It's really just, how are you wired, and that can, definitely play a role into, say, sports where you might succeed a little better than others, but also how to program effectively and how to train to be able to improve certain areas of your fitness. But I think one of course is, male, female, but then genetically there are some differences there. And then other things that play a role are biological age or training age, things like that over time, over across the lifespan. And as you train longer, you'll start to see some changes in this. And also through training, we can work to, even dampen somebody's nervous system. You might think, why would I want to ever do that for someone? But if you think of a sport like CrossFit where, occasionally there's a one rep max lift, but oftentimes it's who can lift mm-hmm. slightly sub-maximal loads over and over and over again faster than everybody else. Yes. And so for something like that, someone with a slightly more, a little lower neuromuscular efficiency actually might perform better.
And conversely, your power lifter, you'd want them with a higher...
Exactly. Yeah. You want them to be able to dig deeper into the nervous system. That's essentially what we're looking at here is the higher NME person is able to dig a little deeper into their nervous system and recruit those higher threshold motor units. And their maximal efforts are actually closer to their physical potential versus somebody that's a lower neuromuscular efficiency. What they feel as maximal, their ability to recruit those motor units, it's not actually as close to their higher threshold motor units. And that's, noticeable when we do tests for this in which we test them at submaximal, because the opposite is what tends to happen. So someone with a higher neuromuscular efficiency, you test their, as many reps as you can do at 85%, mm-hmm. They're not going to get very many reps, because, again, their 1 RM in say that testing period, and we can go over how I would test this, is much closer to their potential. Right. Yeah. Versus somebody who has a lower neuromuscular efficiency, who, they could do maybe double digit reps at 85%. I've actually seen that. That completely changes the game. So if you're talking about programming for somebody, that really is going to impact how they respond and if you're going to stress the system enough to create the adaptation that you're going for.
So fascinating. So for that person with the lower NME, how much easier... And perhaps it's not a good question then, but how much easier or harder is it to train this person to actually improve their one rep max? And as you do that, because you said there's some biological genetic components to this, will their NME stay the same? Or do we see that also start to change as you do this training and I'm looking to increase my one rep max?
Yeah. So the person with that lower NME oftentimes is going to find it a little bit harder to increase, say, their absolute strength. Mm-hmm. It is going to take a little bit more time. And yes, I think we can influence it. I think I do, I kind of stepped a little bit forward, probably a little too quickly. Probably should talk about how we actually figure this out.
Oh, yes, yes. I'm like assuming because I know how to do it. So I'm like, yes.
Right. So for me, I tend to look at the back squat's an easy one to do. You could use an upper body variation, but a back squat. Give somebody 15 or 20 minutes to build to a max. And now, so this is somebody that is a little bit more advanced. They're somebody that can perform this move it safely. They either have spotters, they know how to bail, just covering all my bases
exactly.
There. Make sure the person's appropriate for this. And they test that one rep max. And then after that last lift, I usually give them 10 minutes, exactly 10 minutes to adjust the weight to 85%. And that 10 minute window is kind of a buffer. It's a chance for their nervous system to recover a little bit. Because again, if this was really, if this person's a higher neuromuscular efficiency, they really kind of push the envelope there. It's going to take a little bit for them to recover. And if I do the next set too close to that effort, it's not going to give me a true result. So that gives me a little bit of a buffer. And then at the 10 minute mark, I have them perform one set at 85% for as many reps as they can. And I control their tempo here. I give them a pretty strict 3 on the way down, no pause in the bottom, fast on the way up, 1 pause at the top. Because if you watch somebody complete 10 reps, on Instagram, they might stand for 20 seconds between reps. So I'm trying to control that a little bit here. So that's a 3-0-X-1 tempo, or 3 on the way down, no pause, fast up, 1 between reps at the top. And I'm looking for how many reps they perform. And then I can kind of see where that person sits on this spectrum of lower to higher neuromuscular efficiency. So if that person goes to 85% and they only get 1 to 3 reps, that person, again, low reps actually means higher NME, which is kind of weird to think about.
Yeah, that's when it gets messed up.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Right. But hopefully it kind of makes sense there. If that person really they're really efficient from a nervous system standpoint, maybe they're highly trained, maybe they're a little bit older. Maybe it's also, a genetic component. They were really able to push it and recruit a ton of musculature for that max effort. So going to 85% is going to be very, very tough for them to perform a ton of reps to that area. So that kind of gives you an idea. They're higher neuromuscular efficiency, so they got low reps on that submax test. But on the opposite end of the spectrum, that person who isn't quite as developed from a nervous system perspective, or they're a little bit more dampened, they're not able to really push the envelope on the max. So 85% to them doesn't feel the same as 85% to the person that really was able to push the envelope there. So they're able to perform, I consider anything 8 and above a little bit more on the higher end of the spectrum. So it's kind of like lower is 1 to 3, middle 4 to 7, higher 8 and above. That shows me they got a ton of reps on that 85%, that submax test. So that means they actually were lower on the NME on that continuum because they weren't able to dig as deep. All right. So hopefully that kind of makes sense there on the higher and lower. It can get a little bit confusing. But from a concept perspective, if I'm trying to build some strength for that athlete that's a lower NME, kind of the example that you mentioned, they're able to perform a lot of reps at that submaximal percentage. So if I stick to more standard strength and conditioning protocols where I have really high intensities and lower volume or lower reps per set, I'm working, triples, doubles, heavy singles, things like that with that individual, they're not going to really respond a lot to that. Because again, they're not able to stress the system enough because they can't dig deep enough to stress the system enough. So it's same. I think that example is like, okay, you had one person, 85%, they were able to perform 3 reps. Another person able to perform 10 reps. If I gave that person, set triples at 85%, something that you might see in a strength conditioning protocol working for absolute strength, that person with that high NME, every set feels maximal to them.
Yeah.
Even though it's 85%, they might not even be able to finish 5 or 6 sets at 3. But the other person who is able to do 10 reps at 85% because their nervous system is maybe, is not quite as developed or is a little dampened, they might not even feel like they really pushed themselves, because they were able to do 10 at that weight when you tested them. So for me, it kind of shifts the programming, template or range a little bit to the right. So if I'm looking at it on like a graph and I have my 1 to 3, my strength stuff is like 5 and less, my hypertrophy range being like 8 to 12 reps and my muscle endurance being above 12 reps. If you see something kind of classically like that, that's not going to work for that person with lower NME. We're not going to stress the system enough. So I actually have to kind of think about that being shifted to the right, where I need to actually work in higher volumes at relatively high percentages for that person with lower NME to be able to stress their system enough to, you know, create those absolute strength adaptations, which is kind of counterintuitive. You wouldn't think that fives and sixes, you know, in the back squat are really more maximal strength work, but that's, that's something that person might need. Yeah. Cause I've got to find a way to give enough stress to the system to be able to create that adaptation. And if I'm not doing that, then they're not going to adapt. And that's where I see this a lot with athletes that come to me is they've been doing these, you know, templated strength protocols in which they go heavy a lot and they wonder why they're not getting that much stronger. And then you do some kind of testing like this and you kind of determine that they just need a much higher volume relative to the average person just because of their nervous system development.
That makes so much sense. You guys, rewind that. Told you to have a pen and paper and write it down because then it gets a little confusing. But to me, this is fascinating. I want to ask you a question about the 10-minute interval because It sounds, and again, so much of what I base my questions off is like, you know, personal experience and like, well, what does this mean for me? The 10-minute interval of waiting sounds scary to me. Like, I feel like perhaps does that benefit the person with the higher NME more? Like, I feel like if I wait 10 minutes and I don't have that stimulus of that weight on my back, when I go pick up 85%, it's going to feel heavy again.
What you're saying. Yeah, I think it definitely, the person that is higher NME is going to probably need that interval a little bit more than somebody that's lower NME. I haven't run into that where I feel like that interval has been too long to where I felt like it negatively affected the performance of someone, say, with lower NME. I guess that I can see what you're saying there. I think that's something that, you know, if the athlete communicates that, maybe I do adjust the test or maybe I try it a little bit differently. I'm going to still maybe run it that way the first time, but I'm always open for adjusting and getting that feedback. I want that feedback from all my athletes. But I tend to err on the side of I'd rather have that interval just be a little bit too long just to kind of control any other variables.
Sure.
I don't want there to be some other reason why they may not have performed well on that test or where their results would have been skewed because I'm just trying to get as accurate of a picture as possible. So I usually sit with that standard 10-minute interval. Mm-hmm. That seems to be, like you mentioned, your coach from OPEX. That's where I got a lot of this. Also, you know, the late Charles Poliquin is, famous for all of the information with this. So, you know, the Poliquin Principles, his book was one of the very first strength conditioning books, I think, that I read. So people dive into Poliquin stuff, too, if you really want to know more about this stuff. And that seems to be a common interval there is 10 minutes between those two efforts.
Do you ever see... Again, asking for myself, do you ever see people's NME change? Like, because you said it also, it ties into your training age and just how proficient you are with these things, where if you spend more time and you get coaching and maybe, you know, you needed more time under tension instead of higher actual load. Do you ever see people's NME change? Like, they just didn't do a good job with that test the first time. Like, have you seen that? Is that a thing?
Yeah, I think there might be some learning to the test too. Maybe the very first time somebody performs it a second time, but I do see that over time you do see a little bit of a shift here. Especially if we're talking, you know, specifically somebody that's a little bit lower NME, it kind of shifting across the spectrum as either their training age or their biological age continues to increase. And I think that's evident, you know, by what's needed to stress the system. We know that, you know, as you become more trained or as you get older, it doesn't take near as much to stress the system. If you talk to any kind of master's athlete or a higher, you know, more advanced athlete, if they do something, you know, that is a very high percentage of what they're capable or a higher volume, it takes a lot longer for the recovery period versus someone that's still relatively new or somebody that isn't, you know, is a little bit younger. You know, they perform one training session, they get done, and 10 minutes later, they're ready to do it again.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of similar to that in that regard, in that, you know, over time, as someone becomes more trained, they do become more efficient. Maybe it's because of their that actual movement pattern. Maybe they're perfecting that movement pattern a little better. Those neural pathways are just becoming that much more efficient. So for me, over time, I do often see that somebody might end up increasing their absolute strength number, and then that NME number in terms of their AMRAP number might actually go down a little bit, which is okay depending on where they are on the spectrum.
Yeah,
you just have to figure out where that person is, and then you can do the same thing. opposite end of the spectrum where you work to more, you know, to dampen somebody a little bit that's a little, you know, too explosive. And then again, you know, citing OPEX, this is something that was pretty well documented with one of their top athletes back in the day, Danny Nichols, who was extremely explosive, big dude, really strong, can put up some crazy numbers. But from a CrossFit performance perspective, they had to actually try to, you know, dampen, you know, his nervous system to be able to perform those slightly sub-maximal loads over and over and over again. And there's, you know, nervous system component to that. There's an energy system component to that. There's a lot that goes into it. So that's where I love the individual design aspect of this, is you got to take each person as an individual. Where do they stay on this continuum? Where do they need to go based on what their goals are? And then try to help them to progress towards that.
I love it. And I think it speaks to the utility of, you know, the benefit of individual coaching. I love that you kind of threw in the beginning that, that kind of intermediate person, the person that's like been doing some stuff, has some goals, has, you know, gone through other things and is like, okay, I've plateaued at this. You start to see like, yeah, this is where the benefit of good coaching comes into play, because you can really look to individualize what this, how this person is training, and not just based on anthropometrics of like, okay, well, you like are really tall and skinny, which is also what you see, and you're like, oh, you're just a hard gainer, and it's like, well, what does that mean, and what else is going on? So, it's really nice to hear. I know that that's probably my favorite episode that you guys did, because you just did such a good job of explaining it, and it's something that I'm fascinated with just in terms of looking at CrossFit, because CrossFit does test so many of these things, and especially when you look at like the average kind of like a regular competition and just looking at like the differences, like that person's like so good at that, but then like they go into that thing and they can't do it at all. Or like, what makes this person better? What makes for a better athlete in this? And understanding the, like the neurology behind it. It's just absolutely, absolutely fascinating. If people want to, because you're still coaching, you're doing all your remote stuff too, right? How, if people want to reach out for coaching or, you know, things like that, how can they do that?
Yeah, CarolinaPerformanceTraining.com. There's a kind of a contact us area on that that sends a message to my inbox, and I'll get back to you right away. Yeah, I love, you know, we love working with remote athletes too. It it's one of those things that it's taken some years to kind of figure out how to best deliver, you know, those services to people around, you know, around the world, really. And it's not, you know, it wasn't easy at first. I've been the person, you know, where you're texting training videos back and forth and you're sending emails, and then, you know, they're texting you because they can't find the email you sent and you're trying to get their results from. And, it, you know, it's been, you know, it went from that to using some pretty advanced kind of software now that, you know, there's a few out there. We use True Coach, which has been great, and it allows for some pretty seamless communication there. And we feel like we've developed a pretty good kind of platform, and you know, seen some really great results with it. And if anybody does have interest with that, we'd be happy to talk to them.
Awesome. I will link it in the show notes. Going back just a hot second there, you said one of the differences with NMA can be male female. Why is that?
That's a great question. You know, that is
if
a great question.
I don't know.
Yeah, I you know, I wouldn't say I have a definitive answer on that. I think it's just kind of more of a, you know, some kind of correlation that was kind of taught to us a little bit when you talk about some of those continuing education opportunities, but then also, you know, something that I have seen anecdotally. Yeah. I rarely have, you know, men that are able to perform double digits on that 85% test, but I've seen people up to like, you know, 14, 15 reps on now. Now, granted, sometimes tempo ends up getting a little lost near the end of that. So you sometimes have to, you know, take the results a little bit with a grain of salt if you're not, you know, you got to watch them closely
for
with
sure.
that.
But it's not three. Like this.
Right, exactly. It's clearly different than the person that was only able to perform two or three.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, I have seen that firsthand, and that's also kind of what most of the other coaches that I've, you know, really, you know, seen, you know, gained mentorship from have also preached as well. It could just be the, you know, the way we were designed or developed and just how our nervous systems have developed. We know there are probably some genetic differences there. What those exactly are, that might be a little above my head.
Cool. I mean, it's just questions to pose for people out there to think about. Like, this is the stuff that you want to go deeper into and just kind of be like, why? Like, and also still very much value the anecdotal information, because it's like he's seeing this stuff. Value that. Take that. And then also say why, and go learn more and take courses. And this stuff to me is absolutely fascinating. I have no interest in actually programming ever, but I love dissecting programming and being like, this is the why behind it. So I'm all about, you know, work smarter, not just harder. And so it's nice to see, you know, I help out with at our box, each of the coaches gets to go through a programming cycle. And one of my best friends does programming. So sometimes she'll be like, Shantae, what do you think about this? And it's, to me, fascinating to be like, okay, well, this is what we think we're going to tax with this. And this is how long this should take. And what's the best way to go about, you know, getting this kind of desired stimulus? So I find this stuff absolutely fascinating because there's a why, there's a science behind it. Like, this is amazing.
Yeah. And we're still growing, especially in the CrossFit world. You know, this sport is relatively new, you know, in terms of functional fitness. So I know if you look back at things that I wrote maybe even 3 or 4 years ago or 2 or 3 years ago or maybe even last year relative to what I'm doing now, I would probably look back and be like, what was I thinking, you know? Because it's constantly
growing
and changing the sport, you know, subtly changing a little bit with, you know, the change in structure. So that's what's cool about this. It allows you to really explore a lot of these things and put it into practice. And that's a lot of what, you know, programming is. It is, you know, providing a really, a, you know, what we like to think is an educated guess towards it and then evaluating the result and seeing how that person responded to your intervention and then deciding what you might need to adjust going forward. So it's constantly test, reassess, just like in PT. It's the same kind of thing in coaching. You know, you're giving somebody an intervention based on what their testing and assessment showed, and then you're reassessing those metrics. Did they make improvement? Great, let's keep going. Did they not make the improvement you wanted to see? What can I change? Why? Why did that maybe not go the way I wanted to? And then you just keep growing from there.
So good. Optimizing the human experience, optimizing performance. It's so good. You guys out there, I don't know how, like, I'm excited here. I'm taking a million notes. Like, this is the stuff that should be just getting you totally amped up. You said something about you said something back there that I kind of want to use as a segue. You started talking about PT. You got a big announcement coming for us, yeah?
Yeah. We're very, you know, I am so lucky to have a chance to join an amazing team at Vertex PT Specialists. You know, they, you know, as I mentioned, you know, we've had kind of our intertwining of businesses for a while from being, you know, clients or patients of each other and working with each other in various capacities. And we're finally getting a chance to bring it together and bring it under one roof and all of us, you know, come together and work to provide a really hopefully seamless operation where somebody can, you know, come in, you know, see, you know, their physical therapist and get the best in one-on-one PT with a doctor of physical therapy and then progress over into the strength and conditioning side and continue on and help that person, you know, optimize their life through fitness. And so we're really excited to be able to have all that under roof, have a PT side, have a gym side. And really we're just, I'm thankful to be in this position to be able to work with some great PTs, man. They really do it, in my opinion, the best out there, and I'm excited to get to join forces with them.
This is amazing for you, but also for the people in that area. If you guys are in the Columbia area, South Carolina, and you're looking for a provider, are you guys actually? I'm gonna throw it out because I don't know if you are. Have you guys considered bridging? Not even bridging the gap, mixing the two and doing remote stuff for the physical therapy side of things. Because you do it for coaching.
There have always been discussions. We're always talking about new ideas. I think that is an interesting thing. You know, again, it's just about making sure if we're going to do something like that, could we provide the best quality service in that? So we got to, you know, you have to figure out exactly how that would look. But, you know, there are people that are trying to do it. So it's definitely a conversation that we've had and we'll probably continue to have, especially now that we have so much experience with, you know, remote coaching services.
Exactly.
You know, we might be able to figure something like that out one day.
Oh, totally. I mean, I think if anyone's going to do it and do it well, it's going to be something like you guys, an operation like you guys. I mean, I've done remote stuff. Is it the most ideal? No, but if someone contacts you from the middle of nowhere, whether it's in the United States or another country, like you have to do, it's really hard to be like, okay, well, go find a local provider because they're like, literally you have no one. And I think one of the things that you may have seen from coaching people is a lot of times, at least what's been my experience with the PT side of it, and you know, legality wise, you can call whatever you want, whatever consults, things like that. But one of the things I've seen is that it's people are not coming in with these things that I've like never heard of or never seen. And I'm like, oh man, this sucks that it's remote. I need to touch you and be able to feel it. It's oftentimes people just haven't received good care. No one's sat and listened to them. No one's given them the basic things that get people better. So yeah. I would be really interested to see if anyone's going to do it and do it well. I think it would definitely be you guys. So either way, if you guys are, I'm like, chomping at the bit here. You guys out there, if you're in Columbia, if you're around there, you're looking for providers, definitely check them out. Can they go to Vertex VertexPT.com?
Yeah, VertexPT.com. Yeah, find everything that you want to know about PT on there.
Awesome. That's like a huge opportunity for them. And oh my God, I'm like, perfect segue. I'm going to let you go soon. But first, how are you juggling all of this? You own two companies. You go to continuing ed. You are always learning. You're hosting a podcast. You're doing remote coaching. You're in PT school. How are you doing it all?
Well, I first have to give a huge shout out, whether she listens or not, my amazing fiance, because she puts up with all of my crazy schedule and is so supportive. And, you know, I mean, you got to have a great team with you. Yeah. And so, you know, she's my team. So I got to give her a big shout out. But honestly, to tell you the truth, it hasn't always been easy. And I, you know, I am not afraid to mention that to people when they ask about it, because, you know, self-care really hit the back burner there for a little while. Mm-hmm. You know, I went from, you know, really being, you know, fairly competitive in a sport that I really enjoyed in CrossFit, to my training hitting the back burner and, yeah. and, you know, skipping a lot of training sessions, something I never would have thought to do even, you know, a year prior. I, you know, sleep and my own nutrition, my own training really did hit, lows for me. And so that it really has taken a lot of, kind of, you know, self-realization that I needed to adjust that and try to prioritize a little bit better. And then also, you know, big things with time management and then being willing to delegate and, you know, kind of pass things on and ask for help, because, you know, I do have some amazing coaches with me at Caroline Performance Training. And of course, with Brandon, the podcast, and my other PTs that we do body tempering with, there's I have some great people with me. And so it's being okay and willing to ask for help when needed. And then, also classmates, you know, I have some great classmates that know that, a lot of times I'm burning the candle at both ends that are awesome at, you know, working with me to create a study guide for an exam together or whatever. I mean, it takes a team really to do anything if you want to go far. So it's just about aligning yourself with some great people, prioritizing accordingly, making sure you're managing your time, find an amazing fiance if you can out there. And then, you know, fingers crossed, it all works out.
So good. I mean, you are doing so many things, and I was super pumped to bring you on, and then even more pumped when I started reading the bio and kind of looking more into you, like in that stalker way. And I was like, dude, this guy's doing so much. And I want the listeners to be able to hear that and be inspired by that. And also, you just drop some reality, you know, some realness of like, yeah, it's not always easy. And something oftentimes falls to the wayside. And we make these sacrifices because of these commitments and these things that we've determined to do. Has there ever a time where you, it doesn't sound like it was, but there was ever a time where you were like, I shouldn't do this thing because it's going to take too long? Like, it doesn't seem like this, but does that ever pop into your head?
No, I can't say that's ever popped into my head. There are definitely, you know, there were times very early on in the business when I was trying to grow it, and also with PT school, thinking like, you know, do I just need to focus on school? Like, is it, you know, is there time for this later? You know, is it something where maybe I want to, you know, bring on a partner to, you know, take over a lot of it and let me just do some of the coaching and not some of the administrative work or whatever it might be, or outsourcing some different things. So there are definitely, you know, those thoughts always, you know, creep into your mind a little bit, but I think in the back of my mind, I kind of, you know, I had to just keep my eye on what my ultimate goal was. And the ultimate goal was to have an opportunity to blend PT and strength conditioning together, to be able to see patients, to be able to coach athletes, to be able to have, you know, great conversations like this, and to you know, work with people in so many different ways to help better, you know, better their lives, whether it be they're, you know, trying to optimize performance or, you know, in any other goal that they may have. And so, you know, knowing that that was the goal down the road, these all just seemed like necessary steps. So it's just keeping the ultimate goal of having that facility and that opportunity in mind. It keeps you going, you know, sometimes you just got to look back and say, why am I doing this? And as long as you really are, you know, set in why you're doing it, oftentimes you can do some amazing things on very little sleep.
Yeah, it's true. If you have the goal, that's what it all comes back to. I recorded an episode earlier today, actually, with Meredith Root and Alex Parker. We're talking about goals, and it all comes back to that why. Like, why did you start this thing in the first place? And if that why is still there and that passion for that thing is still there, that you're willing to, you know, sacrifice, and probably don't even consider it sacrifice. You're just like, I'm willing to do this thing because it's what I have to do to get to the next level. Last question of the day, my dude, and you could say you don't know. if you want, because you've answered a million questions.
Hey, but shoot.
Advice you'd give to those looking to kind of bridge the gap. It's something I get asked a ton. People saying, should I go to PT school? Or PT is kind of, should I do the strength and conditioning thing? Advice you'd have, because you have both, you'd give to either or.
Yeah, I am a huge believer in finding great mentors. I think you can learn a lot from a book. You can learn a lot from going to class. There are so many different ways to obtain information. And for me, I think that having, you know, mentors that are, that you can really learn from is invaluable. And I've been fortunate enough to have those in both of those areas from a strength conditioning and a PT standpoint. I've learned more from, you know, a rotation with Brandon for 8 weeks than, you know, an entire semester of PT school. Or, you know, and it's the same thing from a strength conditioning perspective, is finding, you know, people that you really respect, that you feel like have something that can, you know, that you can really learn from, and then be willing to make sacrifices to work with that person. You know, if you have a great PT that's 2 hours away that you really want to learn from, or two, three, four hours away, you know, ask them if you can spend the day with them. Go ask them if you can go buy them lunch to be able to take an hour of their time. You know, be willing to drive places, to travel, to go meet people, put yourself out there, find mentors that you can go and, you know, go and, you know, shadow, watch, ask those questions. Because I think, you know, there's people in the trenches in both of those, I guess, professions of strength conditioning and PT. You know, you can learn so much about what's actually going on that you can't really learn from a book all the time. So for me, it's about finding the people and then, you know, doing everything you can and making those sacrifices to make sure that you can connect with those people.
So good. Connection. Yes. You guys heard it here first. Josh, man, your answers to everything. So good. I'm going to have to bring you back on definitely once the clinic starts and kind of see how that's going, and you can drop some more knowledge on people, because this is so good. If they want to contact you directly, because I've given like a bunch of different things, if they want to either contact you, follow you, what's the best way that they can do that? You.
Yeah, I think my Instagram at JoshJeffrey5. You can find me on there. I can't say I post a ton of stuff on there, but I'll try to be a little better about that. If you want to reach out, we mentioned CarolinaPerformanceTraining.com. That's a great way to mention or to find me. It sends me an email. Or if you want to follow the gym, you can go to at @CPT_strength. And then, of course, like you mentioned, we got the podcast. Shameless yes. plug for the podcast. Episode 11, probably my favorite. That's when we happened to have Dr. Shantae on there. That was episode 11. If you want to go back to that one, we did just pass a year. I think we're on 50. I think we just put out 59, maybe.
Yeah.
So we're not. Yeah. So it's been great. But that's the Better Faster podcast. You can go to betterfasterpodcast.com or at Better Faster Podcast on Instagram. We always appreciate when people tune in and listen to what we have to say.
So good, you guys. So many ways. Contact him. I'm going to put everything in the show notes so it's easy for you guys. I cannot recommend Josh as a resource highly enough. If nothing else, listen to the podcast. It's going to make you want to reach out to him too, so you can pick his brain some more. And like he said, if you are looking to bridge a gap, you're looking to learn more, reach out to someone who's doing what you want to be doing, who knows what you want to know, and buy them something. Right? Buy them, have lunch, yeah. and pick their brain. So this is someone definitely you want in your corner. All right, I'm going to stop picking your brain because I've done enough, but I'm going to do it again later. Thank you so much for coming on, my dude. This was everything. And then some, the time actually just flew by. Like I could just
thank
keep
you.
Talking.
I really appreciate it. It's an honor to be on here. I really do appreciate it.
My pleasure. You guys out there, definitely hit up those links that I posted. And a big thank you for tuning in. Right, I know you guys could have been doing anything, and you chose to listen to us. And I'm gonna speak on Josh's behalf. And we're both very, very grateful for that. So if I could do one more ask. Or ask you one more thing. If you liked the podcast, do me a favor, leave a little review, leave a star there. If you loved it, subscribe. It does help people to find the podcast. Okay, no more questions for you guys, no more asks for you guys. Until next time, my friends, Josh and Maestro.